Viola Williams, Reel 23.
I don't know where I got to.
You were saying about the how they were pulling together
the
Ibu areas.
Yes, they were. And I was back in Nigeria about 4 years ago, and I was absolutely fascinated to find how the Ibus had infiltrated again into both the voluntary agencies and the government in Lagos. Because, it must have been 20 years ago, but even then, I wasn't expecting quite so much Ibu influence in the general national situation as I found 4 years ago. The national YWCA president was an Ibu. The national treasurer was an Ibu. And back in the government, quite a lot of the top people in the government were, including, as far as I remember, the public relations officer, were Ibus. Because I did two or three television things while I was there, and I'm almost sure that one of the television people was an Ibu. But it was interesting that they were the bright lot, and there they were again, coming up on top again.
That war, you know, the Biafran War, and you were in a very sort of important area of it, weren't you? What were the, you know, what sort of impression did you get of that war and what it had been like? Was there a lot of devastation?
Yeah, it was, there was a tremendous amount of devastation. And of course there'd be a tremendous lot of looting, which is automatic. And but it was extraordinary how I didn't find the same sort of race tribal hatred that I had found, say, in Jerusalem between Arab and Jew. It was a recent sort of thing. On the whole, the people were much too busy getting back on their feet again to have time to wander about hating people. And I think, if anything, from what I could make out, the resentment about the war came from the other parts of Nigeria rather than from East Central part. Because again, I think, and of course, the agencies, you see, to a very large extent, had considered that East Central was the lot that had been hurt, and therefore that all the aid was going into East Central and not so much into the other part. And I think the main thing that came out of it was that they were glad they got food again, because apparently the food situation had been pretty rocky, and the whole thing had been completely wrecked, and they were lucky to have a strong man as that they'd elected as their president, who I don't remember his name, who could pull them together. He was a general. No, this was a politician. He was the governor. He was a nice man. He was a strong man. I can't remember what his name was. I've probably got it somewhere, but heaven only knows where.
And you were saying that, you know, you were dealing obviously with the split families, with your work with Save the Children and orphans.
Yeah.
And were there many orphans?
Oh yes. Yes, there were. There were a lot of orphans, and there were a tremendous amount of split families where possibly the parents had sent the kids away to another part of the country, another part of the province, where they thought it might be safer. And there was a tremendous amount of work, and I know Save the Children did a very good job on this, of getting children and parents together again. We weren't affected so much, I don't think, because we were much more working on the educational side rather than on the social side, and we managed. But everybody was still slightly traumatized, I think, by the whole thing, because it had only just finished when I went out there, and but I'm very glad I went, because this is probably not, I just hate Nigeria from the bottom of my soul. I've always hated it. I've been playing in and out of Nigeria since 1965, and it has got progressively worse. Therefore, I was very glad to have an area of Nigeria with which I could feel some sort of rapprochement, some sort of feeling of affiliation and getting together. But Nigeria, I don't know the Arab North. That I don't know, so I can't speak about that. But the African South, Nigeria Airport is beyond, it's silly, it's beyond belief awful. It always has been, but it's just got, and the traffic and the poverty, I don't know whether it is that it's just never recovered, or whether it did just after the oil boom, it just went downhill, but it's not a nice country. I did go back to East Central when I was there. I didn't see my mate, but I saw one of my other mates there, and they had definitely pulled themselves together, and they'd gone a tremendous long way in all their educational projects, and I was very proud of them.
Because it's very rich in oil, isn't it, Nigeria?
Yes, I think it still is rich in oil, but the corruption and the... and the waste of money. After all, it was Nigeria, wasn't it, where the Minister of Agriculture's wife bought gold bed. I think it was Nigeria, and they squandered so much of the money, and so much of it was banked elsewhere. That they got from oil, and the country generally didn't really benefit from it. Not in the same way that Nkrumah had made things work in Ghana when he took over, but when the Nigerians took over, it wasn't. So they of course, I suppose. Well, there weren't more tribes, I don't think, but it was just that they weren't able to pull together properly. Right from the beginning, they've always had trouble, right from the time they became independent.
What would have been the dominant colonial power there in Nigeria?
Oh, Britain. Britain. Right from independence, or right from the very beginning, I suppose. Britain was the power there, because we'd got Cameroon. No, it was the French Cameroon that was next to Nigeria, not the British one. The English Cameroon was the other side, but it had got French on the other side of Nigeria, because it had Togo and Benin, and then it was Ghana, which was us. And then it was Gold Coast, and then it was Ivory Coast, which was French again. It was very much split out along there. But we had the biggest chunk. We were having Nigeria. Mm-hmm. How it evolved as a country, I don't know. But it's still having terrible tribal problems. It's just had an awful bust up in the north on tribal problems up there. Christian Muslim, which is also basically tribal. But otherwise, I don't think I've got an awful lot that I can say about Nigeria. I hope that it will pull itself together and become a viable country in the same way that some of the other African countries have managed to do it, in spite of civil wars and things. But Nigeria really is a mess, there's no doubt about it.
You were working again with women's organisations there, were you? Just with the Y, yes. Were there many other women's organisations, you know, that had a part in the war and the post-war situation?
I don't know. I had got quite enough to do dealing with the Y, because the Y had been a fairly strong organisation there, and it had still got the makings. A lot of the people were still there, and it was just a question of coordinating them again and making sure they've got just enough support to get back on their own feet.
Mm-hmm. You were talking about, you know, sort of tensions between the national Y and the work you were doing in Nigeria. Yes, was this part of sort of a structural problem with the
tribal?
Was it?
Yeah.
Yes. So what would the national Y have been? I can't quite understand the sort of difference.
The national Y, offhand, I can't remember the tribes, but there were the national Y was mainly the tribe round Lagos and up into Ibadan. And without looking it up, I can't remember the tribe.
Now that explains it, you know, that it was Nigerian based, as it were.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, it was. It was a big Y, a very big Y, and at one point it had probably one of the best YWCA buildings and hostels in Lagos that we had anywhere in the world. And I can't blame its decline on the war. I'm afraid I can blame it on the Nigerians, but I can't blame it on the war. But when I was there 4 years ago, it really was absolutely appalling. And I was interested because I don't usually mince matters when I come across something which is pretty bad, whether it's Kenya or Korea or Nigeria. And I was very interested that about 2 months after I got back to Geneva, I had a letter from the residents of the hostel asking me if I could go back and stay for a bit. And the residents, of course, were all local Nigerians. I was very flattered by that because I didn't mince words in that trip that time. I got quite a bit done in the time I was there. But I think honestly that's about all I can say about Nigeria. Because it was only a very short trip. It was just to get the USAID money back in action in East Central. And I was very lucky in finding a very good woman to work with.
Yes. Did you ever become involved in sort of human rights issues, you know, in Nigeria or any of your other third world places?
I suppose Thailand I did get involved in to some extent, because the Y there was doing some quite good work in the local jails, and I did get involved a bit there. But that was only a very, very sort of sideline as far as I was concerned. I think my chief contribution to human rights, if you call it human rights, is that in all the jobs I've had overseas, or in this country for that matter, it has been a question of giving women self-confidence and helping them to realise their capabilities. And I think that is probably, if you can call it a contribution to human rights, I think that's probably my contribution to human rights. I mean, when I look round at some of the women that I've had to work with in countries and seen what they've ultimately developed into, not necessarily to do with war, but what they've developed into, it makes any kind of job like mine very worthwhile. I want to get hold of one of my colleagues in Zimbabwe, because she, when I first knew her, she was a little youngster, and we got her some training, and she was YWCA, and then she married a parson, and she came over and she took a course at Selly in this country. And she is now one of Zimbabwe's ministers for, I think it's sort of minister without portfolio sort of thing. But she gave a rousing speech in Cairo last year. And I'd like to get hold of her now and find out what her views are on what's going on in Zimbabwe. I've got a meeting in Geneva in June, and I'm hoping we might get one of the Zimbabwe people up at that, in which case I might be able to get some dope on that. But when you say human rights, as far as I'm concerned, it's been to some extent the emancipation of women. Not only in overseas. Because you see, having been mixed up with the WI since the 30s, we were the WI was the organisation that got the village women in this country emancipated, and it was our war that helped the WI with its emancipation of village women. So that right the way through, It's always been this question of giving women self-confidence to realise their potential. That sounds terribly sort of, that's the real UN jargon, that.
An aspect now of conflict, which has come to the fore, of course, with the split up of Yugoslavia, is the treatment of women in war, and particularly sexual abuse, rape. Yeah. Did you find that in your post-war situations, wherever you've been, that was one of the effects of war, if you like, on women?
No, I don't think I can honestly say that I came across that a great deal. Or if it was there, it wasn't one of the things that anybody landed on me as something that wanted dealing with. Malaya was physical abuse, I think, in Malaya, but I don't know to what extent there was sexual abuse. Korea, of course, there was sexual abuse. I mean, you couldn't, and one almost had to take it for granted. I mean, after all, you can't have an enormous American army running loose in a country with very attractive young girls without a fair bit. I mean, we could tell that by the number of orphans that there were, mixed race orphans. So there weren't very many marriages that came out of that. It was nearly all just passing with ships that passed in the night, and left the women with the kids. Where else? Oh, Sudan, of course, was ghastly. I suppose. No, I admit I didn't come across it in Somalia either. No, I was not of the kind of sympathetic person that would get that kind of a thing out of the women. I could get their financial worries, I could get their educational worries, particularly training worries. I could get their feeding worries, their agricultural worries, but I don't think that my personality was the kind of personality that got out of the women I was working with their sexual life. Because I wasn't married, and that there's no doubt about it that that does make a tremendous difference. Because if I'd been married and could have said that I had children and grandchildren, I would probably have got that side of it. But I wasn't married, and I was fully occupied with the things that I could deal with, and that was one of the things that, on the whole, I never touched.
Is that part of the reasons, you know, for the success you've had, that one selects the jobs one can do to one's best abilities, do you think?
I think you have to
concentrate.
And I don't think I've ever gone to an overseas job and done what the job description said. Because always what you think you're going to, and one of the things I've always found, and this has always infuriated me, but I really don't manage it, is that I've always been a job ahead of my equipment, and the equipment that I take out for one job has been what would have been useful for the last one, because I hadn't got it in the last one, but it wasn't what I wanted when I was working with it, and so I've always been a job divided from my equipment. Wherever I've been, that's happened. But the only time that I have come in contact with the sexual side of it was when I've been working with African women, and the question of circumcision has come up, and that has very often come up because of, to be perfectly honest, of interfering whites. Whatever nationality, they have felt that circumcision was so wrong that something had got to be done about it, and they were the people that were going to do something about it. And what I found, and I found this in a number of different places on women's circumcision, was that the African women, the educated African women, are quite well aware of this. They know their onions. And I found that their attitude was, for God's sake, you women keep out of it. This is our problem. We're dealing with it as best we can. It may take a long time, but we know what we're doing and we know how to deal with it. Keep out. And I've had that over and over again. They haven't been... I don't think I've had it against me, because I've been very much on their side. But I've been in so many meetings where the Africans have said, please, let us deal with this ourselves. But that I think is probably the only time I've ever really bumped into that. And I've met that in one or two meetings where the UN meetings where I've been, one or two NGO meetings where I've been, and the white women have been very concerned about it, and it's not their affair.
Yes. Is this a question of imposing Western values on other cultures, you know, this arrogance?
Yeah. Of course, this has been, to a very large extent, I'm sorry to say this, but it's to a very large extent, it's been the missionary influence right from the very beginning, because they, as you were saying earlier, they have gone in many places feeling that what they did and thought and felt was right, and therefore anything that wasn't absolutely in accordance with what they felt and did and thought was wrong, and therefore it had to be eradicated. And it's only really since the independence of the Africa, I'm talking about Africa here, but I think it applies just as much to some of the other countries. It's only since they've been independent that they've been able to realise proudly the value of their own cultures. Because it was the pride side of it that had been very largely destroyed by colonialism for whatever reasons. And they've got such a lot to be proud of. I mean, when you think of the Egypt or Korea or China or any of them, I mean, all right, the Zulus were a bloodthirsty lot, but they had a structure. They had a good tribal structure. And we pride ourselves on our civilizations, but what I got when I was in Korea always was, well, we had a civilization when you were running about in woad. And I got quite a lot in the Far East. And also I got it in parts of Africa where they've had, I mean, Zimbabwe, which is up to its neck in trouble at the moment, they had a civilization there. They've got buildings there, which any country in the world would be proud of, that are centuries old. And yet we are so sure that we're right. And we're not always right. And I've very often been ashamed of it, so I don't mind telling you. But I think that was about that for the moment. The only other bit that I've really been involved in where we did have trouble, of course, was Sudan.
When did you go to Sudan? Sudan?
I was on the World staff as part of the World YWCA staff, and I'd just about come to the end of the assignment that I was dealing with, which was it was called job creation, but it was really going all around the world trying to help women to earn some money or to set up money earning institutions and so on. And I was back in Geneva, and I was wondering what I was going to do next. And my Filipino friend, who was also on the World staff, who was doing much the same sort of thing, and the boss called us into the office one day, and she said, "I've got two assignments that I want to deal with, and I'm going to offer it to you two, and you can fight it out between you." And she said, "I've got Bangladesh and Sudan." And Priscilla said firmly, "I am going to Bangladesh because that is my part of the world," which was perfectly sensible. So I said, "Well, that leaves me with Sudan, which I prefer." So, so that was how that started. And the thing was that the war in Sudan, which had been going on for 17 years between the north and the south, that was direct and absolutely direct result of Western interference in the setup in Africa. I'm unfounded all over Africa, but that was one of the most disastrous ones, because the south is Negro and the north is Arab, and to try and put the two together when one lot's more or less Christian and the other lot is absolutely dynamic Muslim, I mean, it was asking for trouble right from the beginning.
Thank you.